Good evening and welcome to another Tuesday Night in Excellence here on FTRradio.com. You are listening to Gillespie and I am your host, Josh Gillespie. Hey, thanks everyone for tuning in this evening. We have a really good show for you tonight. Seriously, an evening in excellence, really. We're going to be talking with Fox News commentator and lawyer Sherilyn Harley Laban. You guys are getting familiar with Sherilyn. She's becoming a regular on the show. We love having her on. She's going to be talking about the Supreme Court case and Obamacare. We're also going to be talking with, presidential politics with National Policy Director for the National Federation of Young Republicans, Jason Whitman. And then we have the all-important intervention. I think we all know that Mark Warner desperately needs an intervention. Anyway, we have a great show for you guys tonight. We are going to lead off with a familiar voice. You guys have come to love her. We come to love her on our show. She's a Fox News contributor and a lawyer. She is Sherilyn Harley Laban. Sherilyn, how are you doing?
I am great. Thanks for having me.
Oh, of course. Well, we wanted to have you on this week. Again, we'd like to talk to you about court cases. And obviously, the biggest court case going on this past week was Obamacare and the Supreme Court. First of all, what was your reaction towards what you saw this week?
Well, I kind of broke it up, and you know, it was 3 days, and the 3 days were very obviously distinctly different. The first day, the government laid out its case, and you know, it was as expected on the first day. I think on the second day, which is what we were all hoping and expecting and, you know, sort of listening in anticipation of, was the major crux of this whole issue, this whole week, was the individual mandate.
Yeah.
And I think what we all heard this week, and you hear the government argue a very poor case. I mean, there's no other way to put it. Yes, I am a conservative, and I'm a lawyer. I'm a former senior counsel and Senate Judiciary Committee, so my job was to watch the court. And no, I'm not a fan of Obamacare, but having said all of that, I've got to tell you, the government, Donald Borelli, did not make a good case. He could not answer very specific questions on the individual mandate. It is also very clear to anybody who heard the tape that Judge Sotomayor and Judge Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg were essentially jumping in and helping the Solicitor General of the United States, who we can assume has argued before the Supreme Court more than a few times, okay? Mm. The other thing is, and some may argue presentation is not everything, it's the argument. Well, I would argue, yeah, his arguments were poor, number one, and number two, his presentation was terrible. I have never heard such more stumbling and stammering of a Solicitor General in my life. I mean, it was really a very poor performance, and I don't know whether it was the performance or the fact that his arguments were just so weak.
Well,
a combination of both.
Do you think that Justice Kagan, as the administration's defense of Obamacare is being given, is just cringing as she used to be the Solicitor General?
Well, I would think she is. You know, that's what some of the Twitter feed said is, you know, I bet you she's cringing because she knows she could have done a better job.
Uh-huh.
I mean, here she is watching this guy stumble and stammer. And I will tell you, I, you know, didn't listen to any of her arguments when she was Solicitor General. But as we know from going through her confirmation process, she's a very smart woman.
Yes.
And she's the former dean of the Harvard Law School, so she has quite a bit of public speaking experience. So I can only guess that she would probably do a better job than Donald Borelli, because I just thought his performance was just very, very poor. The other thing, the other point is, and I think this gets to the crux, there's many cruxes of this argument, but on the third day, of course, was the major discussion about severability.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is really a situation where not only the court has to think about how we're going to handle this, but whether we kick it back to Congress to fix it. Because if you, in fact, do strike down the individual mandate, And these were some of the questions that Justice Alito raised. He said, you can in effect, crumble the insurance industry because there are so many affiliated industries and so many different parts of this whole Obamacare, which, you know, affect almost a quarter of our nation's economy, healthcare, the healthcare system. So just by striking down the individual mandate, you don't solve your problems. I think your problems are just beginning, in fact.
Yeah. Well, we're talking with Sherrilyn Harley-Lebon. Sherrilyn, it seemed like the justices were obviously kind of coming down on the political, ideological spectrum that we expected them to so far. But what do you make of Justice Scalia's argument that basically if you strike down the individual mandate, you have to gut the whole thing? And
right.
I mean, because they don't have time to look over 2,700 pages. But then you had
Justice
Ginsburg. But then you had Justice Ginsburg saying that, you know, the more conservative approach, and I thought she chose her words interestingly, but that the more conservative approach would be to, instead of taking a machete to the whole thing, you do as basically using the Obama line from the 2008 presidential campaign, you take a scalpel to it.
Right, right. So you're absolutely right. This is where you see the ideological shift, but the breakdown in the court.
Yeah.
Because Ginsburg is not willing to, she does not want to, you know, sort of gut the whole thing. But Scalia is saying, and he made a great reference to the burial insurance. I'm sure you remember that comment, where he said, you know, we're all eventually going to need burial insurance, but does everyone have to pay for it? Do you, Josh, have to pay for my burial insurance? And then the whole thing, the comment he made about the broccoli as well. And I think Justice Scalia's comments are right on the money. We will all eventually need burial insurance, but do we have to compel everybody else to pay for it? And if you don't buy it, should you have to pay a penalty?
Well,
that's the question.
Well, what's funny is that I saw a link from, I want to say it was Town Hall. It may have been Hot Air. No, I take it back. It was actually from a British publication. It was from the Daily Telegraph. And they found a clip of then Senator Obama when he was campaigning against Hillary, and Hillary was running on nationalized health care. Then Senator Obama said you could no more fix the insurance situation with an individual mandate than you could cure homelessness by ordering everyone to buy a house.
See, there you go.
He was right.
Yeah, you're right.
But it was just funny to hear some of the justices actually use that argument, the very same argument that Obama was using against Hillary.
Exactly. Well, what I find so interesting is that last week, I think, was a culmination of events, most recently, of really the co-discussion with Obamacare. We've seen the polls for the past year that have got over 60% of Americans want Obamacare repeal.
Yeah.
We've also seen in the past couple weeks the CBO estimates of how much Obamacare is really going to cost.
Yeah, it's doubling.
It's certainly not. I mean, it has almost doubled from what it was when they passed it. Because remember, Nancy Pelosi said, well, you were going to have to pass it to see what's really in it.
Exactly.
And that is really the whole point here, is that, including these judges, they didn't know really what this was all about until they read it. And the American people are just getting a really true, clear picture of how much this bill and the implications of Obamacare, not until now, and it's 2012. And then finally, my last point, when you look at this HHS contraception rule, to me, this is couldn't be a more clear picture and example of what most Americans don't like about Obamacare. They don't like the government telling you, number one, what to buy, what to purchase, and number two, telling Catholic entities that you are going to offer this service and from the private sector, you're going to offer the service, and you can't raise premiums to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's the democratic idea that, you know, the government's going to pay for stuff, and the people are going to get it free. No, nothing is free. And this is not how we operate in a free market capitalist system. That is the system. These are the you know, tenets of what our country and our Constitution was founded on. You know, we're not Europe. We're mm-hmm. not communist China. This is America. And by telling a private sector company that, yes, you are going to offer contraceptive services, and you're not going to be able to raise premiums in order to pay for it, that totally cuts against the grain of our Constitution and liberty. This is just not, it does not square up with what the founders intended for our country.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with lawyer, author, Fox News contributor, and now regular Gillespie appear, Sherilyn Harley Lebon. Sherilyn, on the third day, it seemed obviously that this was probably the less, probably the more anticlimactic day all the testimony. Now,
I would agree.
Tell me though, because I actually think it is quite important though, but I think it is probably lost on a lot of people, including myself, the importance of the third day though. They were talking about the Medicaid exchanges, state by state exchanges. Now, honestly, this is something that I really haven't necessarily understood. I know that in some states the exchanges actually work quite well. Indiana has the Healthy Indiana plan, which we were fighting for, but basically the administration said we couldn't keep it. Mark, do you know if the Healthy Indiana plan was an exchange or not?
It wasn't.
Okay. Well,
you had to buy it.
Uh-huh.
You had to buy into it. But it went by how much you made a year.
Uh-huh.
If you made a certain amount, you couldn't buy into it.
Okay.
And it's a good plan.
Yeah, it is.
But it's looking like it's going to be. I mean, I talked to a couple of senators the other day, and they were like, "This will kill our health plan.
Well,
it'll kill the state if this remains intact."
Yeah. But so, Sherilyn, can you explain a little bit about the third day in terms of the whole Medicaid and exchange situation?
I wish I could, and I will tell you, when you start talking about the reason why I find Medicare and Medicaid so difficult to explain is because we're talking about 50 different states.
Yeah.
And all the different states have different Medicaid and Medicare plans. And I think part of the discussion is the extent and how a federally mandated plan shakes out in 50 different states. Because 50 different states have different funding plans. And let me add this. One of the points that CBO has just shed some more light on is that they said that Obamacare is going to cost $50 billion
mm-hmm.
over a decade to the state. Now, here's the problem, guys. These governors, and you know, because your governor has been able to balance his budget and had a tough job doing it, these governors are trying so hard to balance their budgets and find money and create jobs. So here, what's being pushed down their throats is a federally mandated plan, which ends up being an unfunded mandate, because these guys are going to have to pay for their own Medicare and Medicaid plans. And when you talk about the deficit, all the economists tell you the major problem with our deficit problem is the escalating cost of Medicare and Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
And that problem is the governors. Each individual state has to figure that out. This is why the host severability argument, third day, and the funding and all of this stuff comes into play. Because Medicare and Medicaid are escalating.
Mm-hmm.
We have no way really of controlling it because people are getting older, living longer, there's more poor people, you've got different, I mean, let's put it this way, in Mississippi, which is one of our poorest states, the cost of Medicaid there are going to be totally different from, say, for example, New York State, which includes New York City. Mm-hmm. And then that those costs are going to be totally different from, say, the state of Oregon or Alaska. So that's the problem. I mean, you've got 50 different states and 50 different Medicaid and Medicare programs.
Mm-hmm.
And that just makes the whole idea of an unfunded mandate so, so expensive.
Exactly. We were talking with Sherilyn Harley-Laban. Sherilyn, we already know that the justices have taken their initial vote on the outcome of Obamacare, but we know that that vote can change over time, which is why we won't know until June what the final outcome is. But if you had to take a guess right now, how do you think the court is going to decide, and how do you think this is going to impact the presidential election?
Oh, gosh, that's the question everybody's asking. Number one, I can't predict. Obviously, Justice Kennedy, we think it's a swing vote, but I'm not sure that the other ones can't be swayed or that the conservatives on our side can't be swayed. I just don't know.
Yeah.
I really just don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And in answer to the second question, you know, I think from what I've read, and I do have a degree in history, but here's something that I think people really haven't absorbed. This is the first time in about 75 years that a sitting incumbent president will have the Supreme Court deciding the constitutionality of his major signature legislation during an election year. I mean, that's pretty powerful, guys.
Mm-hmm.
This is his signature legislation, and he's running from it.
Mm-hmm.
He's running from it. It's crickets on the campaign trail. You don't hear any mention of Obamacare. It is if they're running from it.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost as if they're embarrassed. And I think, really, guys, it can cut either way. I think if it's struck down, it will galvanize the Democrat base because they'll say, look what they've done. They struck down Obamacare, and they can do the same with so many other signature pieces of legislation or some other crucial legislation because this is an activist court, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
Or, on the other side, if the court upholds it, or if the court strikes it down, it could galvanize the Republican conservative base and say, look, we were successful in striking this down, so we need to make sure we elect a Republican president so that we can stop all the rest of these regulations that he's been sneaking in and stop any other crazy legislation like Obamacare. Or, if it's struck down, I think it will totally galvanize the conservatives because they'll say, oh, no.
Mm-hmm.
We can't let this happen. We can't let this happen. Either way, I think it's going to galvanize the conservative base.
Well, I hope you're right. I hope you're right. James Carville came out last week and said that the striking down of Obamacare would actually probably help the president. And to a certain degree, I can understand where he's coming from.
That's exactly what scared me. Yeah, that's exactly how I feel. I think if they strike it down, they'll galvanize the Democrats.
Well, this is
oh my gosh.
This is why we need to get our message down now.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
And because they are already preparing. I mean, you can hear it in the way that the administration was talking about, especially the individual mandate, by calling it the personal responsibility clause.
Yeah.
I mean, they're already changing the name of the mandate, and they're trying to co-opt conservative language by calling it the personal responsibility. And then they had the gall to say that Republicans, they were behind the individual mandate as recently as 1995.
Yes, I saw that. I said, well, you know, good for the Dems. Aren't they clever? They really know how to co-opt our language, don't they, Josh?
Yes, and it scares me. It scares me, and this is a discussion that Mark and I have had on this show with several other guests about how Republicans suck at staying on message and staying on one particular point because we start drifting off into so many other areas that happen to be nuanced. We go for the nuanced argument because we can't stay on one thing because we'll find one thing we disagree with and then we will hammer away at it until it's a dead horse and then we keep hammering away on it. And
well, we certainly could be taking some messages not messages. We could be taking some strategic tips from the Dems, because I will tell you, watching the HHS contraception rule, how that played out, made me very nervous. Made me very nervous. So I knew that we needed to do some work on that, folks.
That's right. Well, and Mark has rightfully taken these people to task over that. It's just ridiculous. Well, Sherilyn, thank you for coming on the show again this week. We really appreciate your insights. I just love it. I just love it. So we thank you for coming on again this week.
Well, it is always my pleasure, and I think next week's going to be another interesting week because people will be digesting what exactly happened to the Supreme Court. And then I also think what's going to be happening is that people will be making their adjustments and comments on what will happen if this is actually struck down, and what does our country look like if this is struck down? What are we going to do with health care if this is struck down?
Exactly.
So there's a lot, there's a lot at stake. You know, are we really going to go to a single-payer system, which people think we, at least the administration, will push for? But there's a lot to think about here, because I think many of us would not argue with the fact that we definitely need to reform our health care system. But the way that it was done with Obamacare and the way that it was sort of thrust down our throats was not appropriate.
That's appropriate,
and that's why 53% of all Americans want it repealed, gentlemen.
That's right. Well, Sherilyn, thanks for coming back. We will definitely be having you on again in the future.
Oh, thank you. My pleasure. And gentlemen, enjoy the rest of your day.
Absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, Sherilyn Harley-Lebon. We'll be right back after these messages. You're listening to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com.
All right, you people on the left and right coasts, listen up. If you want to know what your fellow conservatives in the heartland of America, or as you call it, the flyover country, are thinking, go to your web browser and look at HoosierAccess.com. There you will find out what is on the mind of conservatives from the crossroads of America. HoosierAccess.com is the source for news, opinion, and commentary from conservative minds in the heartland. Add HoosierAccess.com to your favorites today. You can also follow at Hoosier Access on Twitter and Hoosier Access on Facebook, and subscribe to this show and podcast forum on iTunes. That's HoosierAccess.com. I beg the sun
to shed me some light. And welcome back to Gillespie. With us this segment is also another regular here on Gillespie. We love our regulars. National Policy Director for the Young Republican National Federation. I think I got that whole name right. It doesn't matter. You know who he is. Jason Whitman, and also Romney Bot. Jason, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Winning has this wonderful effect on you, where it just brings you joy.
You know, I don't know why I keep on bringing you on this
now,
show.
Now, Santorum supporters can't appreciate that, but...
Now, hold on.
Those of us who support Romney can.
Hold on, Jason. Now, Matt Lewis of the Daily Caller is reporting via Twitter that Rick Santorum said today, and hold on, I'm going to bring it up because I retweeted it because I could not contain my laughter. He says, Santorum predicts he'd be, quote, even more successful, end quote, at raising money for a general election than Mitt Romney. My retweet was must. It was Shatner-esque. It was must contain laughter.
Well, there's no reason to contain laughter about that. Let's just be honest.
Okay. See. All right.
That's rich.
It is rich. I've maintained my unaffiliatedness throughout this primary since my guys have dropped out, namely Mitch Daniels, Rick Perry, and as soon as Newt Gingrich started going just bat crazy. I'm no longer affiliated with Newt. I will never affiliate with Ron Paul, unlike Mark Warner. And
whoa, hold on a second.
And Rick Santorum
ordered my Romney sticker the other day.
Whatever, dude. Rick Santorum wants to.
Can you repeat that again, Mark?
I ordered my Romney sticker the other day.
You know,
I hope you got one for Josh.
I'll be sure to make sure that I superimpose some other presidential candidate's name in that spot where Mark says Romney in the final editing. Anyway, it'll say
you'll probably have to wait until after the broker convention.
Well, I know Mark's great hope would be a Romney Paul ticket or a Paul Romney ticket.
What?
Anyway,
just quit drinking at noon, would you?
Okay. And so Rick Santorum wants to ban porn, which obviously would leave me with Mitt Romney. But yet I'm not completely sold on Mitt Romney. But he will have my vote in November because I fully expect him to be the nominee.
That dude is the nominee. Like I tried to tell you.
Well, hey. Even FreedomWorks has capitulated to some degree on that one.
Oh, seriously?
Yes.
Now, hold on. I thought you received hate email and hate tweets from FreedomWorks. So, for your support of Mitt Romney, what's happening here?
They saw the light?
It could be that simple.
I really think it is that simple. I mean, I don't think that FreedomWorks has a willingness to lose the presidential election. I mean, I really think they have a lot of really smart people that work there.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a lot of good people that work there. I think they see what the rest of us see, that the delegate math just doesn't really allow for any of the other candidates to win at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that they're more interested, finally, I hope, in chasing after getting as much as we can, because we know we're not getting the most conservative candidate when Romney's nominated. I don't think that there's any question about that, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But we're getting the most conservative candidate that we can.
Yeah.
And then we're just going to have to take this one step at a time and, you know, keep moving our agenda forward.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to happen in one election cycle or two election cycles or even three. You know, this problem's been going on for well over 100 years. This liberal mindset, this statist mindset, is unfortunately to some degree ingrained in the American people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so this is not going to be an overnight fix, and I think that they realize that. And hopefully there'll be a lot of other people who currently dislike Romney greatly who also realize that that's important. It's just important to win this one and regroup, hold his feet to the fire, and just keep moving our agenda forward.
Now,
speaking of which, you know, obviously the Senate is going to be a critical component of this.
Well, exactly. And, you know, I know that a lot of people have had their dissatisfaction with the presidential race, and they've said, well, you know, forget it. We're not going to win the presidency. Although I feel like my mind is starting to change on that with last week's deliberations of Obamacare in the Supreme Court. But that aside, a lot of people are starting to seem to turn their focus on the Senate. Do you think the Senate is truly winnable this year?
I do. I've analyzed it fairly extensively, and I think what we're going to find is that neither party will control the Senate. In other words, no one's going to get to a 60-seat mark to break the filibuster.
Yeah.
It's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
So, you know, the best that we can do is gain control of as many seats as we possibly can, and in the next cycle we'll have to try and gain more.
Mm-hmm.
And maintain the seats that we have until we do get to that 60-seat mark, because that's going to be important as far as moving our agenda forward, obviously.
Well, I want to hit real quick back to the Romney campaign, if you don't mind. They've actually had a really successful couple of weeks, not just in terms of states, but in terms of endorsements. I mean, they've really kind of pulled out all the stops lately, first with Jeb Bush, then with his dad, George Herbert Walker Bush. And then it seemed last week, the two seemingly ones that are basically everyone looks to these guys as the conservative mainstays and the conservative future of the Republican Party, and here they're going in line with Mitt Romney, and that's Senator Marco Rubio and Congressman Paul Ryan. How big is that for Mitt Romney?
Well, I think it's huge, and I think it lends a lot of credibility to the fact that he is going to be the nominee. He is the one that most Republicans perceive as the most electable and our best chance to win the White House.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people, these people, particularly Paul Ryan and Marco Rubio, they didn't do this easily. They knew what ramifications it may or may not have on their careers. Mm-hmm. But I think they just looked at this and said, we have got to win this election, come hell or high water. Romney presents the best opportunity for us to do that, mm-hmm. from an electability standpoint, from a money-raising standpoint. So let's get this primary over with so we can start really focusing on Obama and the Democrats and their agenda and really start going on offense instead of this constant infighting and bickering. Mm-hmm. I just don't think it's productive, and I think that they think it isn't productive for the Republican Party either and for our chances to win in the general election.
That's what I've been saying.
Well, so do you think, I know that Rubio has basically kind of been trying to stay out of the limelight during this whole thing, especially in terms of talk for him, you know, VP talk. Do you think his support for Romney and his willingness to kind of put himself forward like this might reignite that VP talk and possibly even make him a front runner? Because, I have to believe that, you know, having someone like Marco Rubio, a standout Hispanic Republican, would do a lot to draw a lot of independents to Mitt Romney.
Well, I think it has huge implications, personally. You know, he's obviously made it clear that he doesn't want to serve in that role. Mm-hmm. I find it hard to believe that if he was asked to serve in that role, that he would decline it.
Yeah.
So I think that's probably why the conversation continues to be ongoing. But he brings so much to the table, mm-hmm. with regard to each of the items that you've discussed, whether it's bringing conservatives on board who are going to feel good about having a VP who's going to be involved in policy discussions, going to be involved in the U.S. Senate, obviously, as his role is presiding over the Senate. And, you know, I think that'll give some confidence to conservatives that uh-huh. Romney will probably govern from a more conservative perspective if he has a VP who's conservative.
Sure. Yeah.
It certainly helps us with Hispanics, and that's an important demographic because they're naturally conservative. Uh-huh. They're a great fit for the Republican Party, and we need to bring them on board. Uh-huh. And we need somebody who can do that, and I think actually Romney will be good at that. I think if he were to ask Marco Rubio to be his VP nominee, it would be highly likely that would sort of encourage a lot of Hispanics to give a second look at the Republican ticket. Mm-hmm. I think when you look at all of the assets that he brings to the table, it's a really big deal. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't think that he endorsed Romney seeking a VP nomination.
Oh, sure.
I don't believe that.
Yeah, I wouldn't either.
But I don't believe that were it offered to him that he would turn it down.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell me real...
You know, another interesting thing, Paul Ryan has also indicated that he would be willing to serve in that role. And I think with his economic and budgetary excellence, he brings a lot to the table in that regard as well.
You know, I completely agree with you. There's a part of me that's, you know, a little jealous just because Paul Ryan means so much to the House Republicans that I'd hate to see a leader like that, especially on budgetary issues, leave the House. I mean, the House just passed his budget this past week. And again, you know, he goes a long way towards addressing the needs of this country, both short-term and long-term. And here the administration just says, no, we don't like it. Well, have you read it? No, we don't need to. Really? You guys give the House a budget that not a single Democrat voted for, and yet...
414-0.
Yeah, exactly. And last year, the president's budget didn't make it out of the Senate. It lost 97-0. So this guy has over 500 votes against him and none for him. How in the hell do they think that they can have this kind of response to Paul Ryan's budget? It's just mind-boggling to me, in all honesty.
Well, I wrote a really interesting piece for Big Government. I'm not sure when it's going to be published, but mm-hmm. it's discussing this very issue because there was a piece in the LA Times basically calling the intention of the House Republicans to even pass a budget controversial.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then discussing, well, I mean, given President Obama's approach to budgeting, you know, this is quite controversial. Well, I mean, how is his approach to budgeting not controversial? He can't get anyone in his own friggin' party to vote yet in the affirmative for his budget.
Yeah.
And that's not controversial.
Exactly.
The Senate Democrats haven't passed one for 1,067 days, you know, dereliction of duty. How's that not controversial? So it just shows that these people have absolutely no seriousness whatsoever about dealing with our deficit, our debt crisis. They have no interest in controlling spending. None. It is irrefutable.
Well, real quick, Jason, we're coming to the end of our segment here, but I wanted to get your take on Obamacare and the Supreme Court and what you, how you think it's going to play out and how you think it might play out in the general election.
Well, the oral arguments, which I did listen to most of the oral arguments, clearly Kennedy is going to be the swing on this, first of all, Justice Kennedy. I do not believe that the government presented a compelling case at all. When one of the justices laughs at your testimony, that's a problem.
Exactly.
That's indicative of a problem.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that the individual mandate is in big trouble. Now, the question is, what will happen with regard to the lack of severability?
Yeah.
Because what should happen is, if that individual mandate is declared unconstitutional, the lack of a severability clause should make the entire law fall, barring activist, you know, an activist decision by the court.
Yeah,
it should simply fall, and we should be done with it. Now, the Democrats are already trying to position themselves to make hay politically from a defeat. I do not think it will work, because I think the American people are going to remember exactly how it is that we came up with that monstrosity in the first place, having it crammed down our throats. Certainly they remembered that in 2010. So I don't think that losing is going to be a benefit for the Democrats, even though that's how they're trying to spin it presently.
Yeah. Well, I know the thing that we've been – that you've hammered on this show, that I said that Mark has hammered on this show, Republicans need to stay on message, especially regarding this. They cannot deviate. Otherwise, the Democrats will capture the argument, they will capture the day, and they could easily use this as a way to win back the White House. And that just scares me and
annoys
me.
Well, we have to lead on this issue, absolutely.
Absolutely.
So let's assume, for the sake of argument, that that individual mandate falls and maybe even the entire law is declared unconstitutional. Well, we better have some ideas and solutions to present to the American people.
Exactly. Absolutely.
In that vacuum.
Well, Jason Whitman, thank you for being on the show again this week. I hate to cut you off, but Mark has informed me we have a couple of surprise guests coming up. And I have honestly no idea what's going to happen. And I know that if Mark is behind it, something shiesty is about to happen. Yeah, exactly. So, but anyway, we've been talking with Jason Whitman, National Policy Director for the National Federation of Young Republicans. Jason, thanks for being on the show this week.
Thanks, Josh. Thanks, Mark.
All right. You've been listening to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. We'll be right back after these messages.
She came down to heal me. I watched her.
6 out of 10 Republicans recommend FTR Radio to everyone they know. The other 4 are rhinos. FTR Radio. Online at FTRradio.com.
And welcome back to Gillespie. Here on in this segment, we have two very special guests with us that Mark Warner is behind. So, Mark, tell us, who do we have here?
Josh, we have Matt Brinkman.
I'm familiar with Matt. Matt made an appearance in our Ask a Rhino segment a few weeks back. He's a total sellout.
He is, and I'm so proud of him. When I think of Matt Brinkman, I cry. Because it's a happy cry, because he's such a rhino and a sellout. And Those people, I love those people.
You do. Matt is the epitome of sellout.
Right. And so I just love sellouts. So
yes. Yes, we know Mark loves sellouts, and yes, I guess I am or something.
Yes. We also know Mark loves fish sticks.
This is true. He's talking about that today, Josh.
Okay. Fish sticks, rhinos, and racism.
Is Hannah Drazich.
Hannah, how you doing?
She's an Indiana native.
Good.
To Montana.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, we have our whole Indiana connection here. It's a little Hoosier Access powwow here we're having at the end of Gillespie.
Right. But it's what I would like to call the Gillespie FTR radio intervention.
What do you need to intervene on?
Well, Josh, I'm tired of people hating America.
You know I am too.
Bacon and steak.
Well, Mark, I don't.
Whoa.
I love bacon, Mark.
I know you do, Josh.
Bacon's about as American as you can get.
Now, there is a person on this call that hates bacon. We need to intervene on this.
No, bacon is sin, Pearson. That's all.
Bacon is what?
What? Don't what me? You know it. You know it's true. You know it's true.
No, I believe that bacon is a gift from God.
Bacon, steak, and everything that is holy.
You know, I'm beginning to believe that Hannah probably hates apple pie.
No,
because there's nothing more American than bacon and apple pie in baseball.
Minus the bacon
and bacon apple pie.
I can't
do the bacon apple pie thing.
You can. How can you justify a bacon apple pie, but you can't eat bacon by itself? It's red. It's delicious. It's God-given.
It's totally different, though. Totally different.
Hannah, why do you hate America? That's the question.
Yes.
Actually, you know what? This is like an Ask a Rhino segment, because this is normally what I ask you, Mark.
But you're right.
This is a perfect question for Hannah Drazich, who we mentioned briefly last week, and we said she is a must-follow, but then she alerted to us that she hates bacon, and only people who hate America hate bacon. So, yeah, Hannah, why do you hate America?
I live near Canada. What can I say?
So you're blaming Canada.
I'm blaming Canada right now, yeah.
You know, that is actually very rhino-y of her. She won't claim it as her own problem. It's somebody else that's causing the problem. That is kind of rhino-y.
I'm perfect. I'm a princess. Get over it.
Oh, now you see, if anybody has actually been following Hannah, Mark, Matt, and me on Twitter easily for the last week and a half, people might see that there might be consternation between us.
And
a lot of it stems from Hannah's hate of bacon, complete hatred of bacon.
What can I say?
Why do you hate America? Answer the question.
Why do you hate
America.
You hate bacon. Okay. You hate America.
You hate bacon. Just as bad as...
Bacon makes everything better. You look at it, you have a cheeseburger, and you're like, oh, man, that's good. Nothing can make that better. Then they're like, hey, here's some bacon on it. And it's like, boom.
Hold on. Hold on.
No, Matt.
Hold on, Matt. Here's the other thing you may not know about Hannah. Because when Hannah eats a cheeseburger, she's eating it without a bun.
I never eat cheeseburgers. I very rarely eat them. And when I do, I mean, I have to sacrifice something.
Hannah, are you a vegan? Are you a liberal hippie vegan?
Yes.
Ah, see, I knew it.
Totally.
I knew it.
What, you want some wheatgrass and hummus?
It's amazing. Have you ever tried it?
Oh, my goodness.
She only drinks soy lattes when she goes to Starbucks.
Okay, I draw the line at soy milk.
Oh, you do?
I use rice milk instead.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, you're one of those people that walk into Starbucks and go, hi, I would like a caramel macchiato, venti bold, please, with a splash of iced milk and iced coffee and 40 names, and just order the stupid drink.
Well, she has to liberalize it, Mark. That's why.
Oh, okay. Caramel, non-fat, macchiato, slim, trimmed, and no fat.
No fat whatsoever. Sure that nothing is in it that used to cast a shadow.
Exactly. Yeah. And definitely no pork.
Well, geez.
Or fish sticks.
Hey, I'm with you on fish sticks. Speaking of fish sticks,
I'm not talking about fish sticks. We're not done with this intervention yet, Josh Gillespie.
No, I just want to touch on this real quick, though. Because we got time, Mark, all right? I'm the one who hosts this dang show.
But still.
All right, so Real M. Warner. Mark, why are you doing this? Why are you being so venomous on Twitter?
And, it's not me, Josh.
And why did you pick a fight with Spike Lee?
I don't know who that is.
You know what? I saw that. That was hilarious.
That was epic, Mark.
Stop.
That was epic.
It's not me. I promise you.
But Mark, you lately you've been telling me on Twitter to shut my pie hole, and normally I would expect that from M Warner 95, but it's coming from Real M Warner 0003, which that is like your signature line. That and Rhino.
Josh, it's not me. Remember that day they were talking about cupcakes?
Oh, that was all April Gregory right there.
Right, that's what I'm saying. It is not me.
So maybe you're doing it with April. Wow, that if you isolated that one sentence right there, that could so maybe you're doing this account with April.
No, I am not. I am not behind it.
Sure.
Fish.
It's not true.
It should be noted that rhinos typically don't tell the truth.
You know, as we're recording this particular show, I've noticed that Real M. Warner 0003 has been extremely quiet.
Hold on a second.
Ooh.
Ask Fingers and ask April, the night we were all downtown together, Real M. Warner was tweeting at us, and we were all sitting there with our phones on the table, and we weren't even touching them.
You know what? It's a conspiracy. It's all three of them.
There you go.
Totally.
Anyway, moving on from Real M. Warner 0003.
I look forward to having you on the show again, Mark. 0003.
You know what?
I have him on weekly, actually.
You know, that would clear things up tremendously if you had Mark Warner and Real Mark Warner on at the same time.
I think
just
I do.
To prove that Mark Warner theory, is not actually.
Hey, Josh?
Yeah.
Why don't you go out to Twitter and ask Real M. Warner 003 if they want to jump on the show next week?
Next week?
Or, not next week, but 2 weeks from now.
2 weeks? Oh, yeah, because we already have next week's show booked. Yep. You know what? I might do that. But I do that, I have you on right now, Mark. So what's the point of that?
You could ask him tomorrow.
I could ask him right now. Mark, you want to be on the show next week?
It's not me. It isn't me, Josh. I swear to you. And you know it's not me. Because you tweeted one day that you're like, if you guys think this is Real Mark Warner, you're crazy.
Well,
Josh is crazy, so, you know.
Tweet, because I have it screen capped.
You have it screen capped.
I took a photo of it with my phone.
You did.
Yep.
You know how to do that now? That's impressive. Aren't you a big boy now, Mark?
You're screwed.
So really, do you like rainbow trout or black bass in your fish sticks? Because that just sounds nasty.
Let's work on the intervention here.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Change the subject.
Well, yeah, typical Rhino would want to change the subject when he's backed into a corner and he's been found out, but...
I was going to say, last time I checked, that was an intervention right there.
It was. That's the definition of an intervention, Mark. We just want you to come clean. And we know that, you know,
I don't know you're not behind it with Duke and Fingers and John Brodigan.
Mark, we know that I'm not that funny.
Okay, we're putting... Have you noticed how many people Mark has mentioned here in the last few minutes? That's obviously a sign of cover.
It is totally a sign of cover.
I'm just saying. You want to accuse me of it when I'm not even the one behind it.
You say that, but it says everything that you do.
Okay, we should start calling you one of the Tea Party members here in Indiana.
Why?
because your photo is on their Facebook page going, "R. Josh Gillespie."
Oh, that. She, you know, it's...
And I still have it on my iPad.
I bet you do.
Oh, roasted. Want me to go ahead and tweet that out? Go, "I didn't know Josh was a part of this conspiracy group."
Oh! Now, Mark, how dare you slander the Tea Party as a whole like that? We know that not everyone involved in the Tea Party is that crazy.
I didn't say they were.
Well, it certainly sounded like it.
Yeah.
See,
you rhino move, hate on conservatives.
I know. You're hating on conservatives because you're a rhino, Mark, and frankly, everyone here is hating on conservatives because none of you are true believers.
I'm a rhino, I know.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. So anyway, back to Hannah's intervention. Hannah, when are we going to sit you down, like personally? It's one thing to do an intervention over the phone, and I have no problem doing that. But I think that basically we need to sit you down, preferably in a place like Scotty's Brew House in downtown Indianapolis, and we need to have you eat a lot of bacon.
A lot of bacon.
A lot of bacon. Hey, Mark, what burger would you suggest for Hannah at Scotty's Brew House?
I would suggest the Schumann Special.
But that has peanut butter on it. It doesn't have bacon.
Oh, no peanut butter.
It does have bacon.
Ooh. Oh, it does have
peanut butter, too?
Bacon
No, I love peanut butter. I love peanut butter. Not on the hamburger, though.
Ugh. Don't knock it till you try it.
I will knock it if I want to.
See, did you just knock a Scotty's Brew House burger?
Hannah's a stubborn person.
You hate small businesses.
You do hate locally owned, no
less. I hate everything that has to do with conservatism. That's it.
Oh!
Wow. Did that just come out of Hannah's mouth?
She is a liberal.
Oh!
She is a liberal.
I am. I'm going over with Misfit Politics. We're all libs now.
So, you get to put on your sock hat and ching pong on the street corner?
Hold on. There were two people talking at the same time there. I don't think anybody understood what was just said. And I swear I heard Mark say nipples.
No, I said Misfit Politics are now liberals.
What?
Didn't you see the video?
Oh, yeah.
You're lying. That's an April Fool's video.
Watch the video.
That's probably an April Fool's
all over
Fool's
the interwebs.
If it was posted if it was posted today, I'm guessing it's an April Fool's joke. So I'm not going to buy it.
You have to go see it. It's pretty legit.
Yeah, whatever. I'm not buying anything that happens on April Fool's Day. Except for the fact that Rick Santorum says he can raise more money than Mitt Romney in a general election. That's just dumb. I mean, seriously.
Rick Santorum, so...
That's just... I got from another Romney bot on Twitter, but he's a good Romney bot. He says that Rick Santorum raising more money than Mitt Romney for general is crazy, despite desperate people thinking crazy. And that's absolutely true. but we're not dealing with Rick Santorum's crazy right now. We're dealing with Hannah's anti-bacon, anti-America crazy.
Anti-conservative.
Vegan.
Anti-small business.
Totally.
Hey, Mark should be proud of me for saying that.
And she hates peanut butter.
Proud of you.
I don't hate peanut butter. I hate peanut butter on hamburger.
Again, if I just isolate the one thing you said, then we have you saying I hate peanut butter.
This is true.
Well, like a good conservative, you like to take words and twist them out of
You also hate apple pie. We have that on video, too, or on audio here. Audio. Recorded.
You have this on audio. Everything is being recorded right now, Hannah.
It is.
Oh, I know.
And conservatism. That will be on Twitter later.
It will be.
I'm sure.
You hate small businesses. That will be on Twitter. You hate conservatives.
I did not say that I hate small businesses. You said that.
No, I think you did say I hate small business.
I heard it.
No, I said I hate everything that is conservatism.
Oh, wow. Holy cow. She said it again.
That was clear, too.
Oh, geez.
Okay. We have to ask the one question.
We're making it quick because we're at the end of the segment here.
This is the big question. Do you hate Ronald Reagan?
No. Who can hate Ronald Reagan? He's like this adorable grandpa person.
Oh, jeez. Oh, jeez.
Ronald Reagan as a grandpa?
Oh, jeez. See, this is what you get for someone who was born in the middle of the first Bush administration. They don't know what they're talking about.
The Gulf War started the month I was born, so what can I say?
All right. Well, I hope everyone is face-palming over this, over Hannah's hatred of bacon and small business and conservatism. And America. And the fact that Mark still won't own up to the fact that he's real M10003.
Hey, Josh. Josh. I think for a preview for the show.
Yeah.
To get the listeners to come in.
Yeah.
You should play a couple of audio pieces, just small ones, saying Hannah Drazic is our guest this week. And she says in this audio, she hates everything conservatism. Boom. That'll bring in at least 100 or so people right away.
And she's going to bring down the rain of hate is what she's going to do.
That'll be popular. Hey, I might get more followers on Twitter. You never know.
That's true. Speaking of Twitter, follow these guys here. Chef Brink is Matt Brinkman. H. Drazic on Twitter is Hannah. M. Warner 95. You really don't. Actually, excuse me. Real M. Warner 0003.
It isn't me, Josh.
and I'm at Josh Gillespie. I want to thank all of my guests tonight, including Sherilyn Harley Lebon and Jason Whitman. You've been listening to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. Stay tuned for the Snark Factor with Fingers Malloy and the Snark Factor Players. Thanks for listening, and have a good evening.